Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and a different episode this week. Didn't invite any golf guest or player or commentary on what's going on in the world. This is a buddy of mine that was really the influence to head over to St. Andrews after college back in 2006 when I went over there and caddied. I've talked a little bit about it in interviews over the years. I've written a little bit about it, but not a whole bunch. And I've got this podcast. I've got this place right here that I can just have a conversation about the experiences and what we can remember. For goodness sakes, it was a long time ago. It flies by, man. Goodness gracious. 06, a long time ago when it doesn't feel like it was a long time ago. But for those that were wondering, I got done with college in 2006, the University of Arizona. And my best friend at the time, who you will listen to a lot on this episode, is a fellow by the name of Will Frelick. He is a Texan that moved to Arizona in high school. And we became buddies really early on at the University of Arizona and moved in together and we're just pals. Really, one summer, we weren't hanging out. Other than that, we were kind of those guys in college that were doing most things together. He was a golfer and he liked a lot of the same stuff I did, and he was a caddy in Scottsdale, and you'll hear the whole story about how we got into, flying to Scotland on kind of a whim and hoping to get jobs and eventually getting a job at the most famous place on the planet in terms of golf. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. It goes a little long, so I don't want to spend too much time on the front end, but, golf back. I hope you guys had a chance to enjoy the weekend and watch a little bit of golf. I know it was fun personally. I am recording this over the weekend because as you're listening to this, I am at Bannon Dunes. And if you follow me on social media, you probably know that. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Shane Bacon. And I mentioned this on the back end of the podcast, but if you follow the Clubhouse Instagram account, which is at the Clubhouse Pod, I will post on Wednesday, the day you're listening to this, or maybe later, I will post some photos from my caddy days at St. Andrews back in 06, some pictures we took. And just, give you a look and a view of what we were experiencing at St. Andrews. So that will be on the at the Clubhouse Pod Instagram account. So go follow that if you don't already. And that's enough. Let's get to the conversation because, again, this was a deep dive into my time at St. Andrews. Short time caddying there. It wasn't more than a season, but a lot of fun. And it was a really, really, it was nostalgic to reminisce about what all went down back in 2006. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Well, I need to give a shout out to Jeff Shackelford because this was an idea from Shackelford. He asked me as his podcast was getting going, do you have anything where you've talked about being a caddy at St. Andrews? And I was thinking, not really. I wrote an article back in the day on Sports Illustrated when I was caddying. It was not for Sports Illustrated. It was like a Sports Illustrated on campus article. And I've penned a couple of pieces over the years about doing this, but I've never sat around and just had a discussion about my time as a looper at the Old Course. So I figured I would do that. And to help me through memories from 2006, which is a long time ago, is one of my best buddies, Will Frelick. Will was the guy that I went over with to the Old Course. He was the guy that had kind of got us set up through friendships and work colleagues that we will talk about. And Will, interesting enough, is a buddy of mine. When I went to the University of Arizona, when I went in 2002 as a freshman, I knew not a single soul at the U of A. I only knew of one human being at the U of A. And I'm saying I only knew of him because I knew of a person that I'd never met through a friend of mine that I played a whole bunch of junior golf with. And that person just happened to be Will. That was basically how we became buddies.
Yeah, no, that was Derek Rogers. And he called me maybe 2 or 3 weeks before we went to school. And he said, hey, I want you to introduce Shane. This is before cell phones. None of us had cell phones. And here's his number. He's in Marshall. Give him a call. And I never did.
Right.
That's weird. And so went to U of A and it was activity night for Kappa Sig. And we were playing pool. And I was like, hey, where are you from? And you said Marshall. And both of us looked at each other and I was like, you're Derek Rogers' friend. It's
just 30,000 kids. Small world.
And then the next 24 hours times 4 years we spent together.
So, I had a decent run with a girlfriend. I spent way more time with Will than any of the girlfriends I had in college. I think you would easily say the same thing. We lived together for 3 years.
Why we're not married to any of our girlfriends. Well, I'm married to my last girlfriend in college.
And the girlfriend,
you were mostly gone at that point.
The girlfriend that you told me at the time, if I start dating her, I will marry this girl, was I think your exact line. And you ended
Thank you for memorializing that. And Megan, if you're listening, which she won't.
she doesn't want to hear about our catty days. Yeah. Will, you grew up in Texas,
yep.
And then you got a caddy. Did you get a caddy job in Houston?
No, well, so closer to you, actually, Trinity. Okay. So about an hour and a half north of Houston. There's a little lake there called Lake Livingston. And a guy named Corby Robertson and Chris, I'm blanking. Hopefully Chris never, he's a really famous running back from University of Texas. Anyways, they owned a summer camp there called Camp Olympia. And I had gone to the camp and they had this kind of, they had a really good golf camp, but they had a rinky-dink golf course. And Corby said, Mr. Robertson, said, you know what? I'm going to build this incredible championship 18-hole golf course. Hired Jack Nicklaus to do it. I think, have you played Whispering Pines?
I have not.
Oh, my goodness.
I was actually just talking to my dad yesterday on the phone, and he said the rankings came out for best courses in Texas. And I asked him, that was the first, I said, is that number one? Because, There was some AJGA stuff there when I was in high school that I never got in, but always wanted to.
Yeah, and that was the whole point of it, too. I mean, you're really good about fostering the spirit of the game and intended to be an international sort of like junior competition-focused course. But anyways, so I went to the camp. I was probably one of the better players, and I was a polite kid. And so the guy that ran the camp called me up and said, hey, Will, you know, we've built this course. It's sand still, but we're getting close to the grand opening. And we'd like to have the opening round with Chris Gilbert, and a couple other guys. Would you come up and be one of the honorary caddies? Because they were wanting to like showcase the junior program too. And I did it, and I carried the bag. I actually got a good story on this one that I wasn't planning on telling. But anyways, I carried the bag, and it was sand. So I mean, they were dropping AstroTurf to hit balls, but it was incredible. I mean, it was just such a cool layout. And from then on, I was a caddy at that course, and it was sort of, I was 16, 17 years old. I mean, I could barely drive. And I was like, Hey dad, do you mind if I drive an hour and a half north to the woods and sleep with a bunch of caddies in a cabin caddy, and no cell phone, no nothing.
Right.
Yep. Sure. On your way. And
right, I know, like, your dad. I'm not surprised.
The parenting is just different these days. No, I mean, it's just looser times. But
for sure.
Anyways, it was a really good experience. But I almost didn't get called back. I would say the biggest caddy mistake I ever made was on that first round. And I mean, I'm 16, 17 years old. And I love to play, and it's hard to carry a bag and watch somebody else play. And I'm talking, and we're coming up on 10, which is just awesome hole. And the guy I'm talking to says, so you're a pretty good player. That's what I hear. And I was like, yes, sir. You know, and he said, I want to see you hit a shot.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, that's right.
you know.
and so I was like, sure. So the next hole is a par three. And I all four hit. And then I grabbed the club out of the bag. And I literally, it's like so embarrassed. Like I literally cringe even telling the story. It's like how dumb this is for a 16-year-old to do this. And so I drop a ball and hit it. And Mr. Robertson did not like that, as he shouldn't have. And I got caught. No issue for the rest of the round. In 18, I got called aside and said, "Will, we're going to pay you this time, but if you ever do that again, not only are you going to forfeit your pay, but you're not coming back." And so
you moved,
good lesson learned.
Yeah, you moved from Texas to Scottsdale to finish out high school, and then that's kind of where you continued to caddy, right?
Yeah. So the pay up there was pretty good at Whispering Pines, and then I came out to Scottsdale, and I just immediately wanted to find a caddy spot. So Estancia was number one course in the state at the time, still number one course in the state. Somehow I called up the caddy master, and yeah, he let me on out there. And there, you got to keep all the money. The course just like hosted you out there. I mean, it wasn't even St. Andrews; they tax you.
Right,
Stancy, you get the whole thing, and so it was like I felt like I was Rockefeller.
Oh, I mean, and you're
didn't
a high
have any
school
friends.
Kid getting cash.
It, when you're not only that, I mean, you're brand new here. You know, you don't really have that many friends yet, and so I mean, Great Escape on the weekend, and you know, beautiful. I mean, a kid coming from Southeast Texas, you know, with you're going to have Bermuda and St. Augustine mixed with a little Kentucky blue and crab and sand and every other clay you can imagine. No offense to the course of Houston. I love them. But you just come out here and seeing that pure rye. And at the time, it was bent, like the best bent you've ever seen in your life. And it was just, it was cool. And you get paid good money to do it. I was a happy camper.
Well, I mean, and you and I talked, you know, throughout college about Estancia. And I mean, you and I were big Wekopaw people up, you know, living in Tucson and getting a chance to come up here. I mean, we got a chance to go out there and play Wekopaw and we'd be all excited about it. But Estancia was kind of the private one that we couldn't get on. It was kind of the Augusta National of Scottsdale. So you and I become friends at U of A, and we are, you know, we are laboring through college and I study abroad in my junior year of college.
Yep.
And that was my first trip to St. Andrews. I was studying abroad in London, and my uncle flies over and we go up to St. Andrews to play
was
the old
that
course.
Was that when I came out and met you in London?
Yeah.
Or was that the next year?
Yeah. That would have been when you came
out. Yeah, that was junior year. Okay. Yeah. You're connecting the dots.
Yeah. So I go to St. Andrews. That was my first experience. Short story about St. Andrews and how serious I took studying abroad is when you study abroad, at least from the universities we went to, my buddy Andrew and I were over at the University of Westminster in London, and all of the grades were basically either one paper or one test. That was it. I mean, there weren't an attendance. There wasn't anything. Well, Andrew and I learned this. Let me just tell you, we really stopped going to class. I mean, we weren't going a lot to begin with, but it was pass fail. As long as you get a P, it transfers over. It counts as credit. We were having fun. I remember Andrew went to Barcelona for like 2 weeks when nobody knew where he was, but, I was in St. Andrews, the town of St. Andrews, and a friend of mine had emailed me or something about our paper due. Literally, the paper that was our entire grade was due the next day. I had to go bribe my way into the University of St. Andrews Collegiate Library to do my only paper for my only grade of semester in St. Andrews. Of course, I didn't realize that, you know, a year and a half later I'd be living there. But I get a chance to play the old course, and I fall in love with it. I just thought it was awesome. And, you know, obviously get a chance to play with one of my favorite people in the world, my uncle Doug. And so you and I, we lived at the same house for 3 years. It was a house your dad bought, probably five or six blocks just south of campus, called it the Shack. You and I were the constants. We lived there pretty much the entire time, except
on the roof.
And that was where our idea of caddying for St. Andrews came was we would sit on the roof. We'd pull chairs up there. We would pull a radio. This is before Bluetooth speakers. We would pull a full, you know, stereo system up there, listen to Texas country.
Oh my gosh,
the worst CD player ever.
Just remember that extension cord running out the back of there.
it was very college, but we would sit up there and you and I started talking about, why don't we go caddy at St. Andrews? Why don't we go to Scotland and work after we graduate in 2006? And that was basically where our idea originated from, was just be an idiot, drink a beer on a roof.
Yep. And I'll dial it back a little bit to connect the dots. So when you were abroad, it was junior year. I came over for a finance program with Eller, and I spent way more time with you than probably should have been with Eller. And I can confirm that you weren't studying.
No.
but there's so many memories. I'm thinking of going to the Texas Embassy with you and a whole bunch of stuff. But anyways, I went up to St. Andrews. It was a 2 week program. In the middle was a bank holiday. And what a bank holiday was as an American, it's just 3 day weekend. And so I think you and I went, I have a memory of going to the Texas Embassy with you that night, having dinner. And then I literally like got on a train and went to St. Andrews with a suitcase and on a bank holiday, which was not a good idea. And I got there at probably 12:30 or 1 a.m. It was raining. And we got off at Lukers, and it just was like a taxi there. He takes me in, and I asked him to take me to like any hotel. So he dropped me off at a hostel, and I go in, and they're like, "No, we are full." And they're looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, you're not going to find anywhere. And I end up just walking all over town. I'd never been there before, dragging my suitcase at like 1 a.m. I even went. I think I was in the police station to allow me to use their phone because that was the only phone I could find. I end up in Scores Hotel down by 18 Green and somehow winded down there. I didn't even realize how close I was at the course at that moment. And walk in, they had room and it was like £200 a night. So like 400 American. And I'm like, absolutely not. And I kept asking the guy, and I'm like begging and begging and begging. And he finally says, I tell you what, if you'll help me clean the restaurant, I'll let you stay in the restaurant. You can sleep under a table, but the owner comes here early. I'm sorry if this employee still works there and the owner's going to listen to this podcast. But he's like, the owner comes in early, so you got to be up by like 6. And so I did, and I scrubbed those tables so hard, and I was busting and I was stacking chairs, and he was really happy with me. And I slept, and he wakes me up about 6 a.m. And I still remember, it was right in the corner. Like, I almost get like goosebumps thinking of this. He put a perfect English breakfast, you know, like the toast with beans and everything on the table. And I got up, and I now knew how close we were to, I mean, I was looking at 18. It was right there. It was incredible. And then anyways, I still didn't have a place to sleep. I still didn't have any golf clubs. So I went down to that little pro shop that's right up from the green. I got clubs. I went down to the caddy shack to like check in and throw my name in. Thank goodness it was raining. So it was actually, they thought I had a pretty good chance of getting on. And I asked him, I said, is Dave Lindsay still working? And Dave was a Scottish caddy that had worked at Estancia Club. And he and I had built up a pretty good relationship. And he said like, oh yeah, that old guy, like, yeah. Oh yeah. You better believe he's here. I'm like, well, will you let him know? He used to call me Sweet Willie at Estancia. I said, let him know Sweet Willie from Arizona is here. And I mean, like 10 minutes later, I hear this like Sweet Willie, like coming down that sidewalk right there. It gives me a huge hug. Like we hadn't seen each other in a decade, which probably, I mean, it'd been like 4 or 5 years at that point. And anyways, long story short, he brought me rain gear and shoes. And like, it was just like the caddy master had told her, whoever was there to start had told him. And so, and then I ended up staying the weekend with Dave. And he had floated out this idea about maybe coming back. And then that cue on the roof and was like, hey, let's start doing this. And then I think I reached back out to Dave and said, hey, do you think my roommate could come too? And he's like, yeah, sure. which is not a solid job offer.
That is the theme of our story about like, getting over there. You know, I ask people online for questions, you know, send in questions about this because, again, I never really formally spoke about our time over there when we got a chance to caddy. And I think about it now as a 36-year-old going back to 2006 for a bit, you know, finishing college. You and I both finish and we are out. I mean, we literally finish college and leave. And so you fly over to, we basically say, okay, we're going to do this. I mean,
you hardly even knew where Dave lived. I was waiting for you on the sidewalk for 2 hours. Like I was out there. Like I didn't even know.
It gives me anxiety now thinking about how unplanned this whole experience was. Yeah. I remember that I had a girlfriend at the time that was going on a program in New York City. And I went home to Texas with all of my stuff because college was done. And which was funny because I drove all of this stuff to Texas. And then I, like 4 months later, drove all of it back to Phoenix. So it's like, it was an hour and a half away from where I ended up moving anyway. It was a really, really good plan by me. I was a great planner in my 20s. But you got over there a day before I got there. And I remember, again, you're talking about planning. I mean, we didn't have iPhones. We didn't have GPS. You told me, I'm down this street. This is the number. I fly in, take a train, kind of the same thing, same process you went through. And you're out on the sidewalk. I walk up. You are having a beer in an apartment that I believe was Dave's.
Yep.
And there was a couple other guys there. I think Tom was in there at this time.
Tom and Matt, too.
And Matt was Fuchek, in there. Matt, who's an American, we'll talk
Shout
about.
Shout out to Matt Fuchek, who probably will listen to
this. Yes, that's exactly right. And you had caddied at King's Barns that day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first day. The first day of being in Scotland. You're jet lagged and you caddied at King's Barns, which is a golf course you'd never seen.
And by the way, on a side note, if you're processing this story right, you're walking up after flying halfway across the world. And I'm telling you that I caddied that day, not at the course I said we were going to be caddying. And by the way, which you're about to get this part of the story, we're not living at the place I said we were going to live either.
So I mean, like, if you've never been to St. Andrews, it is a very small city. I mean, it is.
Oh, you walk everywhere. It's
you
great.
Can walk everywhere. I mean, I don't know what the square footage is, the square mile of St. Andrews is, but it's not big. And you can get across the city in probably 10, 12 minutes on foot. It is very easy to get to. So when I say I'm walking down the street, I am probably 1,500 yards from the 18th green. You know, maybe an 8-minute walk, you know, swift walk, 8 minutes, maybe a little bit less. And you said it. We are living with a lady who had offered that David set us up with, who had offered up a room in her house that had two twin beds.
Yeah.
And it was
that was a lot of quality time together, by the way.
It was 40.
When we say a room with twin beds, it's like a room with two twin beds.
It was not big.
And then the little roller things that we'd hang our clothes
if on. If you live in New York City and you've lived in like a studio, that you understand what we're talking about. So two beds, and it was 40 pounds a week per person.
Yep.
But it was for five more pounds, so for 45 pounds, which at the time was about $90 a week because you pay rent by weeks over there. For five more pounds, she would do our laundry.
And it was that's the best value bang for buck I've ever gotten in my life to this day. She was the best laundry person ever. I still, like, to this day, I comment about it to Megan. I'm like, well, Ivy used to iron my underwear.
Just, I mean, she would iron everything.
It would hang dry in that Scottish air, and she would iron everything. And, like, your socks. Like, I mean, she was awesome. And
diligent, she was the love. Just couldn't have been a nicer lady. I mean, like, legitimately was as fine a person as you'll meet.
Oh, yeah.
She enjoyed us. You know, we would leave in the morning and get back late at night. I mean, mm-hmm. we weren't around the house a lot. I mean, it was kind of go, go, go at that time. So,
but very motherly, and you couldn't understand a thing she said.
Very few of the words.
Like 50%, maybe.
It was very thick.
Thick
accent.
At best.
So, okay. So do me a favor, if you can. Kind of walk me through you arriving the day you get in, how you get to King's Barnes to caddy, and then getting us to that next day, which would have been my first full day in St. Andrews, having a meeting with the caddy master to get jobs to caddy at the most famous golf course in the world.
Yeah. So, you know, I showed up in the same way you showed up, like bright-eyed and confused, just a day before. And I walked in and, it was like afternoon or something like that. And I walk in and I remember this, and no offense to Tom, if you're listening to this, but he had like the worst smelling feet I've ever smelled in my entire life. Like, it was like nauseating.
Yeah, like took over the room, right?
Oh, it was unbelievable. And so I just remember that smell and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to live here. And then, and Matt Fuchek's there too. So it's, you know, first time I met him, first time I met Tom and Dave and just chatting. And so we go in the back and, Dave is normally, he had white wine and iron brew. Like, so, which is orange soda. So he would drink this like gallon of white wine from the gas station and an orange soda, and he mixed the two together. Pretty sure he'd go through a whole thing a day.
It's terrible.
And he's just telling me, like, you know, not only does he not have a job for us at the old course, but he doesn't have room for us at the house. So he's arranged for us to stay with a friend of his who's this widow Ivy. That was the best thing that ever happened to us staying at Ivy, because we went from that apartment to like this lovely late, like where she's literally ironed the couch pillows sort of thing, right? There's another thing out of it. So that was a great thing. But I remember Dave was walking me over to the house. So he walked me over to the house. So I carried my bag over there, introduced me to Ivy. And I was just really happy with that. And then Dave starts saying about the King's Barn thing. And I can't even remember how I got to King's Barn the next day. I think Dave drove me. And I went out there and I caddied. And I think it was a combination. I think Dave said something to the caddy master at St. Andrews, and there, like, a call was made from King's Barnes saying, yeah, this guy knows what he's doing, and they needed help. The key issue was that they needed extras at the old course. Otherwise, we would have still been at King's Barnes. But they needed caddies, and so the combination of Dave and then that guy vouching for us. And so then the next thing I know, the next day, you and I were down to caddy, because you never caddied at King's Barnes, right?
No, I never
did. I think one loop out there.
I think it was your only one was that first day. And so we go meet the caddy master at St. Andrews, which the benefit, you know, I get a lot of questions. How'd you get the job? And I would say that, ironically, one of the reasons we got the job is that we were Americans and not from Scotland. And I say that because the caddy master had been at Pinehurst, correct? Wasn't he at Pinehurst for a while before he was at
Yeah, I think that was
course.
Right. You're talking about Rick, right?
Yeah, and he liked American caddies' approach. I'm not going to say more than
sort of,
he liked the approach of Scottish caddies, but
he liked the reliability, I think, of the American showing up on time and stuff like that.
Exactly, and knowing that, you know, if he needs caddies, we'd come around, and that we'll get to that story a little bit later once you and I started to figure out the process that works so well for us. But we had a meeting. It was a very serious meeting about how serious this job is and, you know, people once in a lifetime experience on the golf course. And, you know, you've got to take it real seriously. And we're going to do a training program where we give you these comment cards.
Yep.
And you have your players figure them out, and literally finished this whole thing to a couple 22-year-old guys and goes, all right, you guys are on the tee in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And we were like, what? And he goes, you guys were on the tee. Now, you'd never play. I mean, I'd played it once.
I played it once that time when it was like raining a year before. But yeah, that was it.
I mean,
Tiger Woods. I mean, well, hold on. You know, Tiger Woods, what is it? 2000.
Playing online a decent amount.
Tiger Woods, 2002.
maybe doesn't give you the sight lines.
PlayStation 2.
When you're on like 3 and 4. It took me months.
No, I've seen this hole before, sir. Believe me.
Literally, the first loop we did together.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are times where I'm.
And by the way, that is rare. Like, cue ball, Matt Fuchek, like, they had to take written exams.
Right.
They had to draw out a green. Part of the exam
was,
draw me 15 green. But they were so desperate and needed us so bad, they just threw us on the course.
Well, I think you getting vouched by Dave and having the experience of playing at a top club in America, and then me maybe never saying that I did or didn't. Maybe just be, you know, which is something I'm not good at. I was just quiet in the background and never mentioned that I wasn't a caddy. You know
For
what I'm
once
saying?
Quiet,
yeah. And so I just kind of was behind you going, no, listen to what they're saying about Will. Listen to what they're saying about Will.
Yeah.
And so we were off and running and we were looping at the old course. And I will tell you, there were moments where you'd come up to me and go, what's the line? And I'd come up to you and go, where's the green? Because
you're like, wrong green, Will, that's 15. The three's right there.
And so we are learning to say we are learning on the fly and learning on the go might be the lightest use of that expression ever. I mean, we are virtually clueless and we're having to kind of lie to the players we're with because we don't want to tell them, you know, this is our first.
Yeah, we got paid for that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like it was a free round. I mean,
they paid us at the end. So just to run you through when we were there, and again, I'm not sure of how caddying works now at the old course. I'm assuming I've heard it's been different now. I heard it's a different process, but something, here's how it would work when we worked there was you would walk down to the caddy shack in the morning, and the first 30 caddy spots early in the morning were reserved for the 30 caddies that had caddied the most number of times the year before prior. So they were considered senior caddies. So 1 through 30 players off every morning.
Yep.
The senior caddies had that opportunity to caddy there. And if they were around, they got 1 through 30. After that, it was first come, first serve. So you and I, early on, would run down there when the sun broke, and we would try to be 35 or 40 or 45. And then we started to learn that we didn't have to do that. Now, what would happen, which Will had mentioned earlier, was we had to pay to caddy. We had to pay the caddy shed £5 every day once, not twice. So if you caddy twice, the second loop didn't cost you more, another £5. But you had to pay, you were taxed to caddy. You paid £5. So we'd give £5, and then you would get your number. And so your number, there was a number on the board, and you would just kind of wait around until they called your number. And then when your number was called, you didn't get a player assigned. You just got a tee time. And that was when you'd walk up to the tee time, and you would basically pick your player, unless you were the last one there. And if you're the last one there, you got the fourth player that hadn't had a caddy yet. So that's the process of caddying. And so what we learned, again, was that we would get up real early. You know, we were determined to be good.
Well, the sun was up at like midnight, so it didn't.
The sun never went. I believe St. Andrews is on the same latitude as Anchorage, Alaska, if that gives people an idea of the sun in the summers. But I always say it's just midnight blue all the time. It never gets totally dark.
Yeah.
So we get up early. What we would do is we would caddy, and then we would have just this extended break and come back and caddy again. But what we learned was, considering how late a days we'd have, was if we went in a little later, there was a chance in the afternoon for our second loop, we'd be the only caddy in the group. And that was really important.
Make more money.
Financially. Very important for us.
Entrepreneurial.
So, you know, you'd get £40 guaranteed for the caddy, and then you get tipped. So we'd get somewhere between 50,
60 and 60, was
65.
Good.
60
you,
was
you wanted
good.
To get the slap of multiple bills.
Yes, that, so like you could fill the 60. £50 note, yeah, yeah. £10 note was the key, or you got 320s. My first loop, and I have notes here, Will, which is hilarious because I kept notes of all my players. My first loop, £50 from June of Scotland in the morning on June 9th, 2006. That afternoon, I got £60 from Gary from Virginia. A lot of American players we would caddy for. But yeah, I just wanted to hear, you know, if you can take me back to starting this job and we start doing this and we get into this routine and you and I we're golf nuts. We love history of the game. We love courses.
Yeah,
before maybe the golf course woke world had kind of become a thing, we loved just getting a chance to call this our office. And we would be out there looping, you know, day in and day out, probably 3, 4, 5 days a week. And then we would typically play golf on the weekend.
You and I just really loved the game, loved the history, and we loved courses. And it was just like a pig in mud. Everything, if there was a trivia show where you could just show a hole, you know, like a blade of grass and a little bit of sand, you'd be like, Oakmont in 18. Pebble 7. It's just like, but anyways, you know, there was a huge learning curve. I remember that. So there's a couple of things that really stick out to me in particular. One is a huge learning curve. Like every single round, you're so much better and so much more confident. Because, I mean, even after like 6, 7 rounds, I mean, there's areas on that course that you've never been to. And so, I mean, there's a couple of them, especially when you get out like 12, 13, 14 range where all those, they kind of come in right there. There's a couple of different routes that you can play on those holes. And so I think, you know, you figure that out after round like 6, 7. And then what you do is you sort of make a point, okay, I'm going to kind of walk that way. And so you start scouting the ground. Because, I mean, more than any other course, I mean, especially American course, you know, it's, you get what you're looking at. You know, it's kind of in Estancia, you're looking down hole 9. It's hole 9. Like, it's not going every which way. Versus St. Andrews, there's so much variety. So that was one. I mean, just huge learning curve. And then the other thing that was just really sticks out in my head is I feel like you could tell immediately if the player was at the beginning of their trip,
yes,
or the end of their trip.
Totally agree with you,
right?
On that.
Because there was, you could just read it in their face, you know. Because if someone is just off the ship, like they just got to Scotland, they slept and they wake up and they're going to the course and they have this like majestic fairy tale like view of this Scottish caddy that's going to sweep them off their feet and know every yardage and read every putt and they're going to play the bet and tell them all the history of it, right? And then in reality, no offense to Scottish caddies out there, you know I love you, but I mean, like, you can't understand a lot of them. A lot of them don't play golf, so there's a huge lack of golf knowledge there.
Overly honest
and overly honest, like abrasive is maybe there's some, we'll say cultural differences. and then there's just like this like asshole type or jerk mentality. And so I think after a few rounds, you're like, oh. And so if you're on that first tee and you have that fairy tale, you've never been disappointed to see, you know, these two kids from Texas on the tee box that know golf really well. If you're at the end of the round, you've never been so excited to see these two kids from Texas that know the game of golf.
Absolutely. And so that was going to be the first question I asked people on Twitter to send in some questions about it. Josh Bold asked, did any players get mad because they wanted an authentic Scottish caddy but got an American instead? Exactly what I would have. I mean, you basically said verbatim what I would have said is, if it was the first round of their Scottish trip, they were really bummed to see us. Yeah. And if it was the last round of their Scottish trip, they were basically hugging us when they
saw us. Yeah, exactly.
And that was
exactly
how it went down. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. There was a handicap cap, basically.
Yeah,
which,
right,
has to be, I mean, the biggest farce in the world. If you're listening to this and you want to ever go to St. Andrews,
just tell the starter, like,
just,
yep,
you print it out on Microsoft Word, I am a 12 handicap, and you'll be good to go.
I don't even know if you need to do. You could write it on a Dunvegan napkin. I'm a member at the Olympic Club.
Yeah, and here's
the pro signature,
anything
right?
There's
there.
No, yeah. They're not typing your gin in to see your numbers.
No.
But I feel like of the things I took away from that experience, number one was, and this is just honest, I didn't realize how bad the average golfer was at golf. And
yeah,
it's a combination of, I mean, I would say probably, what would you say, 60-70% of your loops were American players?
Yeah, that's probably.
Fair. Maybe even higher.
It's a lot.
Got a lot of Americans,
it's a lot,
especially in St. Andrews. And you and it's a different type of golf. I mean, yep, Links golf is very different. The turf's different. Interaction's different. But, I mean, you know, you'd get these guys, I'd always ask them what their handicap is on the first tee and you know, what do you play? How do you play? How far do you hit your driver? Stuff like that I can get a little sense of what kind of player you are. And Will, I mean, you get guys, I mean, if they broke 100, you were thrilled.
Well, it like demands course management which is a caddy you should be able to help with, but not everybody would listen to you. But it really demands a lot of course management and like experience with a lot of tight shots and shots that are just more difficult, and all the troubles on the right. So if you're playing with a right-handed player and
can't point them left enough.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
And that was my thing.
And they just constantly be in those bunkers and the gorse or anything else. I mean, it's just like all day long. If they're not in a bunker, you're digging for the ball in the gorse.
Yeah, you would tell players like, just trust me here. You can hit it left as far left as you want and you'll be fine.
You can hit it straight and have 150 in, or you could hit it 150 yards left and have 150 in.
Yes. Right, and right, yeah. And you would still get the guys that would aim down the middle of the fairway and slice it into those bunkers, or to your point, the gorse. You know, I did an interview with Bubba Watson years ago in Scottsdale before the waste management. And I was asking him, you know, I think he'd already won his first Masters. And I said, you know, Bubba, if you were going to pick another major that you feel like fits your game the best, which one do you think you would pick? And, you know, he gave your political, I could play any golf course answer. You know, I could play anywhere. I think I could win anything. And it was the next year with St. Andrews. And I go, you know, I caddied at the old course, and I feel like St. Andrews is a perfect golf course for you.
With his, he can hit that fade.
Oh, my gosh.
Greens too, right? I mean, exactly. you feed it in. So a lot of the trouble tends to be in the center. And so if you feed it in right to left, that's a really good thing.
Good thing. Yeah. So that's one big thing that I want to cover, that I wanted to cover, was the fact that you were either a sight for sore eyes, or, you know, you were like the worst thing anybody could ever see, depending on what part of the trip they would be in. So we were talking about our process and what we learned. So what we would do is we would go later. We would eat lunch at Subway every day.
Uh-huh.
Every day, dude.
I didn't eat there once because I tried to pay with 50 rubles, but
you got to tell. Would you mind telling the ruble story
right now?
Can you tell the rubles?
Well, you mentioned
story?
Subway, so yeah.
So would you mind?
Were you in the group with me?
I don't think so. You know, you and I weren't in groups a lot together. I think they did that on purpose. You know, we would always be kind of like
diversify the
next tea American time or whatnot. But you know, if anybody that's ever caddied, you know the rule: when they give you the money, you shove it right in your pocket. I mean, you don't look at the money when they give it to you. You try to get it. You try to get any cash out of sight as fast as possible. Yep. So you were doing that.
So I'll back up all the way. In high school, I used to love caddying for the lady golfers because they were polite and fun. And you know what? For the most part, they hit the ball down the middle.
Yep.
They didn't try to get
you
over.
You taught me this very important
rule early.
They didn't try to get
overconfident and hit it right. And they'd hit down the middle. And a lot of times they were pretty consistent with the wood. So it'd be, you know, three wood. And they were just the best. And so, and if you took care of the ladies, sometimes the husbands would pay. And had the husbands been in a different group, like away from their spouse for 5 hours at this point, and their spouse comes in and they had just the best time ever, you better believe that husband was pretty happy and he was going to tip you pretty well. And so that was the case this time. So I caddied for four ladies, and
this one of the afternoon rounds where you were the only caddy in the group?
No, it was a morning round.
Okay.
Because we were having lunch, and it was on, oh my goodness, what's the one all the way to the right? I'm having a blank. The course.
Oh, Jubilee?
Jubilee. So we played Jubilee.
So we would caddy at the old course the majority of the time, but if they needed caddies at the new course or Jubilee,
they put it on.
We would
too.
Go over there. So yep. I mean, there, you know, I have my notes here, mostly old, but there are times where I would caddy on new and Jubilee. So not only do we have to learn, you know, this impossible.
Yeah, you had to learn three really difficult
other
courses, ones.
And the other two golf courses are tougher for the average golfer.
Yeah. So we're playing Jubilee. We are as four ladies. We had the best time ever, and we come in and the. It was four ladies and their four husbands played in front of us. And the four husbands waited on 18 and then they started walking back. And so they walked after they finished out 18, they walked back to the fairway with us and walked up. And she had like a career round. She said, I was the best caddy ever. And she's just like, I had the best time. I love Will, blah, blah, blah. And the husband just goes, attaboy. And he slid a couple bills in my pocket. And I'm like, all right. And this was that thing. It was multiple bills.
Right. So at least 60 pounds.
Yeah. And so I'm all excited. So I'm happy. And it's just nice that she's having such a good time. But you're polite. You don't look at it. And so I finished the round. You and I go to Subway. And I, th- I don't know who was ahead of who, but we're making a sandwich and we get to the line and I take the money out and give it to the person. And they're like, what is this? And I said, it's money. It's not money. And they give it back to me. And I looked at it and it was rubles.
Russian rubles.
And there was a Chase bank across the street. And so I like flush red, like grabbed the money. And I still remember the number. I ran across the street and I like went into the teller and I like gave him the money. And I said, how, what is this and how much is it worth? And he said, that looks like Russian rubles. And keys it in. And then he's like, that's $1.34 or £1.34 £1.34. And if you remember, you said a few minutes ago, right? We paid £5 to caddy. So I lost £5 minus £1.34 to caddy that day. You know, it's like 5 hours of work. And so I'm just like so flustered. And I run down to like, I mean, it's been an hour at this point since we walked off the green.
Yeah, it takes us 20 minutes to get the subway, all that. Yeah.
And so I'm walking down right in front of the Scores Hotel, actually. I'm coming down that street and I saw a lady in the group and I stopped her. I'm like, ma'am, you know, I'm so sorry, but I think that there was a mistake at the end. You know, I think I got paid in rubles and I think I was supposed to be paid in pounds. And I showed her the rubles and she started laughing. And she said they had just gotten from they were in Russia the week before, and she gave me £60.
Nice. So now, in the caddy world, if you have caddied, you know that if there is one thing caddies have, it is nicknames.
Yeah. So the next day,
that was your nickname.
So the next day, I didn't tell anyone. I don't recall telling anyone. And then the next day, you and I come down, run into, and we walk into the caddy hut. We get our number, walk into the caddy hut, and I just hear this. Rubles. To this day, I mean, those guys still, I mean, Matt Fuchek still calls me Rubles.
Yeah.
And, Joe Ferry, Rubes.
You know, I think your popularity in the caddy shack
went up. It was helpful for
sure. Out of the roof because now you had this, now you had a good caddy story to go with.
So,
just because, you know, we're running, I want to get to some questions and such from some people that had to ask in. But so you and I are obviously Americans over there caddy, and we get really lucky. We run into two guys that caddy at a club in America. So they caddy at a club in the States that's nice, and they come over to St. Andrews. They get a job there. They have a car, which was huge for us because we didn't have a car. And so now our golf started. So we had a chance to go
play
golf.
A car.
Now it was this tiny car, remember?
Oh, yeah.
So it had to fit four people.
I totally forgot about four grown-sized men
and four sets of golf clubs,
yeah.
Which wasn't always the easiest. Now, I also wanted to mention that, you know, we played, what was cool is we played golf courses around the St. Andrews area that, you know, if you go over there on a trip, you never play. I mean,
Crail,
Lady Banks, Crail, London Links.
London Links was, you know, great, outstanding.
Which Brad Faxon, who, you know, I work with Brad, qualified for a British Open at London Links, got an honorary membership, and I've told him about it before. He's like, oh, I love London Links.
I thought you were going to say Brad says that's his favorite course. I'm like, no, that's not. It's a good course, but it's not your favorite.
You know,
but it's a great golf course.
We would go play these golf courses. We did have a very interesting moment. Mentioned that the two guys caddy at a really nice club, you know, one of the best clubs in America, and they went and played Carnoustie one day.
Thank you for telling. I know exactly what you're going to say.
Do you remember what they said?
Hold on. Let's pause for a second. I'm going to tee this up. It has been, it was 14 years. You and I haven't talked about this since, I don't think. I do not recall having this conversation. And 14 days later, you and I both remember this comment as if it were yesterday. I know exactly what you're going to say.
So I don't want to mention the club, I don't want to get anybody in trouble here, but these guys caddy at a really nice club. I'm just going to say top 15 club in America. And they go play Carnoustie. And you and I hadn't played Carnoustie yet, right?
No, we had not.
Because we played over there.
We did shortly after this comment.
Yes, it was quickly. So they come back from Carnoustie. So Carnoustie from St. Andrews, I'll say it's probably an hour and a half, 2 hour round trip drive.
You can practically see it from the court.
Yeah, I mean you can literally see it.
Yeah.
Right there, but it takes a little bit of time. Plus, there's no signs. Impossible to find Carnoustie is. I don't know how anybody ever finds it, but we somehow find it when we went and played it. They over there and play it before us. Come over and go. This is better.
How did we even get over there? Because they weren't with us.
My dad. We played with my dad. So my dad.
So we were all over there.
Yeah,
it was me, you, and Monty.
Rental car. Yep.
That's exactly what it was. Oh, really, we stopped at that little pub on the way back.
Yeah, the weird thing is I remember, this is super strange, I remember what outfit you wore the day we played Carnoustie. I think it's because I have, you know, back then it was like all the pictures you took on all the pictures you took on your digital camera were of other people. Like, it was never yourself. And you were wearing this black mock turtleneck and khaki pants.
Yeah, I remember. I bought it in the pro shop.
You bought it in the pro shop. Carnoustie mock turtle. That was, shout out to Tiger bringing the mock.
I still have it, and my dad Pops wears it all the time.
So these two guys who they were like our best friends, come back over. We're sitting at a pub in St. Andrews, and they go, this is better than insert club they work at. And we are like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What? They're like, Carnoustie is like the best golf course we ever played. It outshines every place in America. And we were like, whoa.
You know, in the most sincere, I have something really important to tell you guys from the depths of my heart. This is the best course I've ever played.
And this is what, 06? So, you know, We'd seen Vandeveld. We'd seen the Vandeveld Open not too long before. And we go over there and play. Carnoustie's great. I mean, I think maybe our expectations were a little high for that. But it was fun. So a couple of questions I wanted to get to. First question from our friend Amanda Rose, who asked, who is the superior caddy? Be honest. I feel like the answer's got to be you.
I'm the guest in the house. You have to be polite. It would be bad manners. It would be bad manners.
You've done it before. You know, you're nicer than me. Like, clearly. A lot of you care probably more about what people are saying. I'm just trying to get to 18. Do you remember specifically, another question we got, do you remember specifically, this is from Tom Steiner Evans. He's hyphenated. Tom, who is the best player you caddy for? What do they shoot on the old course?
I do.
Do you remember?
I do. I don't. So I remember it because the round was a circus. So I got, it was two gentlemen from Spain, and the guy played on the European tour.
Wow, okay.
And he was a stick. And for whatever reason, you know, he wasn't a well-known player and like didn't have his card, and they wouldn't let him tee off from the backs. And you had...
That's right.
Right. I mean, this was a really big deal. Like, the only one that was allowed to play the tips, you have to be a card-carrying professional. And they were really upset about it. And so they teed off nicely from the... You know, the regular tees on hole one, and we get to hole two, and he's walking to the back, and I'm walking to the mid up front, and he's like, you know, well, back here, let's go. And
this lands on you. I mean, you're the one that gets in trouble.
I'm thinking I'm going to get fired by the end of the round. Who's the guy that would sit in the middle? Remember, like 7 and 11? Remember, he'd sit right there and
yell at everybody? Yes.
He'd get just peppered.
His entire job was to scream at players and guys. Yeah.
So 7 and 11 cross, for those that don't know. You know, seven comes up and goes right. That's the big famous Schnell bunker. Is Schnell bunker.
Yep.
And then 11 is a par 3, and it comes back. And you're literally hitting over each other. And so the course has a marshal out there.
It's just always a cluster.
And this guy would not play middle tees. And the marshals were coming out every other hole and yelling at me and yelling at him and telling them they're going to throw us off the course. And I don't know how we finished the round, but we did. But all I know is he was the best player.
Do you remember what he shot around? Yeah, did he shoot around even or something?
Oh, no. He was under par, for sure. I mean, he was roping it, and I mean he made it look easy.
So
it was a good weather day. I remember it was sunny. I remember the round so well because it was such a circus.
Yeah. That's not what you don't remember the golf.
Yeah,
you
remember I remember the weather.
And then that is such a caddy comment. You know, I mean, you go back to your caddy days for a minute. It's like, I don't care what you shot.
I remember buckering down in the bunker.
I don't care what you did. I just care about what the number was when you were done, and the fact that you tipped me X, Y, and Z. I think. And this might not be true, but I believe I only had one player shoot in the 70s, and it was an ex-NFL player that I kept.
You had one player shoot 70s?
I think that was it. I think I only had one person shoot, like legitimately shoot in the 70s. You know, I might have had a couple of players that would scare it, but you know, I had one guy, and he shot around 75.
Hey, if anyone, can we go back to the who's the better caddy question?
Yes.
Because I think I had more players shoot in the 70s than you, so I think that says it. I think that answers the question.
Shane. Yes. I mean, I definitely didn't. I will say the best person I had in my group that I did not caddy for was Peter Thompson.
No way.
Peter Thompson was in our group.
That.
And, you know, obviously he won 5 Open Championships and he was kind of the king of Scotland. And he was in the group, and I didn't realize who he was, going down the fairway. He was, I'm going to guess, in his 70s at this point.
When did you put it together? Like, how did he?
One of the caddies told me. He's like, do you know who that is?
But I mean,
like,
was he roping the ball? Like, hitting it, well,
he was
I mean, 70s,
he was old, but he hit it in the button. Yeah, you know, you could tell, like,
yeah, he's just dropping right on. Yeah.
And wasn't going anywhere. But Peter Thompson was my group playing the old course. I mean, that was,
That's pretty cool.
The story and the coolest thing that happened to me was that. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. Got a lot of these questions, and I know my answer. Worst shot you saw anybody hit. If you have one that really comes to mind, if you don't and you're thinking about it, I'll just tell mine. I've told this story a couple times before, so if you've heard it, I apologize. But you mentioned 7 and 11, the cross.
Mm-hmm.
I had a caddy playing 7. 11's the par 3, one of the hardest par 3s in the world, especially if the pin's up front.
Shortest par 5 in the world, as the caddies would call it.
Oh, yeah. Good. I mean, Roel Dornick, I played, has a par 3 that's like that, and I know there's a couple other ones
around.
You put
that pin behind the bunker, and it is nearly impossible if you have
the wind. You basically play short of the green and chip up and try to make a 10-footer. And when you caddy, you would definitely you would
advise
your players that way.
Advise.
Let's lay up. What do
you
say?
What's the yardage? 170. Yeah, it's 150. It's
155 front. 155 mil.
And there's a 9-iron.
So I had a player playing to 7, and the pin on 11 was like on the left side of the green. You know, this is probably, what would you say, 150 yard wide green? Yeah. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, you're counting all the way over on 7.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I mean, it's 150 yards.
It's crazy.
I mean, really is.
And my guy hit a low
snap. The only one more is maybe, was it 4 and 14?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a huge green.
Huge. I think that's the biggest green in Europe. But he hit a low snapper, and it smoked a guy putting on 11 in the middle of the back. And the guy didn't move. It hit him in his back, and he kind of looked and then hit this putt, knocked it in. And I was like, well, I'm not messing with that guy. So I remember that being a shot that was just god awful, and obviously ended up affecting somebody else playing.
So not the one up in any way. Just someone in this room was standing on 11 tee, and I was behind you, and a player, it wasn't my player, but one of the players in the group pulls it left, and went, 4, and it nailed you in the calf.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, hit me in the leg. Still was able to go through, but that's okay. You're gonna get hit. You know what?
You're gonna get hit out there. If you spend enough time on that golf course, you're gonna get hit.
How impactful to your day was the cart that was the snack shack?
Oh no,
behind,
what was that, 10? Right?
Yeah, it was behind 9.
Or 9,
green,
9, 9, 9, 9, green, 9 green. Yeah, it was 9.
So
green.
You know, the no snack shack. I mean, they sold ginger beer at the old course back like in the 1700s, but there was no snack shack there. So we would have the golf cart would pull up, park behind 9. And when you made the turn, my entire day was defined by if my player bought me something.
I was just going to say it was better if the player bought for me.
Oh.
I don't think I ever spent money there. It was like,
if they
I was so
it,
poor. No. You know, we were spending so much money on golf and everything else. I just sort of, it was a way to conserve. I'd spend my money at Subway.
Yeah, Subway or the bar. And then on the reverse side of that, the most depressing moment was when you were doing the late afternoon round and you saw the cart leave.
Yeah.
And you were hungry or thirsty.
Starts heading back.
Because it would be like
and
6.
You had 2 or, hours left, 2.5 hours left.
When I would have a bad loop, you know, I mean, like when you say, I mean, when you think about the way we talk about golf and it's the outward and the inward, I mean, the whole idea of that is based on the old course. I mean, the old course is out and you literally walk 8 holes out. And then you walk in, and that's how you do it. And basically, the town just gets smaller, 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 and you turn around, and it gets bigger, bigger, bigger until you get to 18. And when I had a bad loop, when I had a guy that was maybe not a very good player, and he was kind of an a-hole and all that, I just know there were moments where I'd be on, you know, 7 and 8 tee, and I'd look back, and the town looked so
far.
Small. And you go, God, I got to walk all those steps back. I did want to mention... I'm 22. I worked on a little business deal. Remember the Dukes? Remember the Dukes?
Oh, man.
Hardest golf course that's ever been built.
Created ever.
A golf course called the Dukes. I have no idea what the name of it is. If it's the Dukes, still good on you.
Is it still there?
I think
it was
it's still
a good
there.
Track. I mean, it was a great track.
So
and
it
different.
Was
I mean,
probably,
it was
very different. Inland, not links.
Yeah.
It's probably an 8 or 9 minute drive from, you know, center of St. Andrews.
Straight up the hill.
And this crazy, beautiful clubhouse that looks down on the city. It almost looks like an old castle. I work a deal with them because they had a grass driving range.
Uh-huh.
And my deal was, if you allow us to practice out here and occasionally play, I will push players that I caddy to, if they have an extra afternoon, to come play here. Now, I made this deal without ever playing the golf course, Will. And Will, you and I played the golf course one day.
I'm not sure we sent them enough business either.
Now
that I think about it,
I'm telling
you,
course. It was so hard. We played the backs like 7,500 yards. If you missed the fairway, you didn't find your golf ball. It was
Remember that impossible. With the, there's that hole with the power lines, and it was like a long par five sweeping right. And you just, that grass was like 4 feet high. I mean, it was just,
It was great. So Chris asked, what was the most interesting, non-obvious play that you encourage people to make off a tee or on any given hole at the old course? Something you'd pick up only
easy.
After playing the course a little bit.
Push left on 13 or pull left on 13. You hit left. Yeah. I mean, for sure, that has to be
okay.
It.
Okay. So you hit it left of all the bunkers.
You hit it left. Yeah. Like you're hitting it up. You're basically hitting it up seven, right? Is that seven
up
right
six.
There? Up six.
Yeah.
You hit
it
up six.
Four,
and then you've actually got a really flat shot coming back at the green. With not much bunker.
Because if you hit it down the fairway that we're intending
to
play,
you got a tough shot. Your approach is a lot more hard.
My answer to this question is just I would play away from bunkers at all costs.
Yeah.
So I mean, if I'm telling a guy to play it, if I want a guy to play 10 yards left of shell bunker, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to point him 25 yards left of shell bunker because I know that if we, and I mean you anybody that's caddied or played or anything, I mean if you get a higher handicap player in a bunker, it's death for their round. And if they're in a bunker with a wall that's 5 feet tall,
yeah,
it's really death for
their
round. So I mean, my entire theory around the golf course was just to avoid going in the sand at all costs. And if we could do that, typically the round would be okay.
Yep.
You know, you could at least get it around.
Oh yeah, no, staying left really the whole round. I mean, the one, so there's two, well, three other shots technically that come to mind too. Long on the road hole. So a lot of caddies will aim their player, just try to hit it on an 18 tee box. Yeah, because that tee box sits right behind 17 green.
Right.
And if you can land it kind of in that area, it's not a bad approach. Versus if you're in front of the road hole, if that pin's back left and you're in front of the road hole, or heaven forbid in the road hole, like, good luck.
It's just,
might as well blow out to the right and then
just
try to
save
three putt,
which
much
I've
less
had
four
people
putt.
Do. Yeah. That is right. If you ever play there in the pins anywhere not on the front right, just hit it over there on 18.
Yeah, 18 tee box, a great place to be. And then the other one that's really surprising is literally you can't be left enough on one.
Agreed.
There's you could hit it like 150 yards left on one and you are totally fine. And ditto to 18. The approach coming into 18 is a little bit different, but the approach coming into one from the far left is not, you don't lose anything and you take the berm out.
I will say of the holes at the old course that I never understood, I never captured, it never made sense
yeah,
to me.
I got some of these.
I would say the number one hole that I still don't get, I mean, I've been back over a few times and had a chance to play there. I still have no clue where to hit a tee shot on 12. I have no idea what club to hit. And, you know, 12 is, if you stand on the tee, you don't see any of the bunkers.
It's straight ahead, too, right? I mean, for the most part,
It looks like a very easy par four.
Yeah, 100% agree.
And you can't see any of the bunkers because the golf course obviously used to play the other way. And so you'd see all the bunkers playing up to the green when you tee off where now, theoretically, the green would be. And so,
fairway is so tight. I would give a lot, like, irons a lot off of that. Iron, three wood, as sort of the play. But yeah, I totally agree. That's got to be... I mean, honestly, that's probably got to be the hardest one.
But you know what? It would make me nervous as a caddy walking off because, you know, you get 9 and 10, which are both very, very easy par fours.
Yeah.
I mean, for any player, you know, 9's driver wedge or you
nothing.
Can drive the green if you're 270. And then 10 is driver and a pitch, too. So 11 was always tough. But
I recall you driving 9 one time, by the way. It was either a 3-wood or a 2-iron. In my head, I've got 2-iron.
Downwind.
If it was downwind, and I'm in my head, I have it as a 2-iron. It was a long time ago, but it was one of those heroic shots years.
I would always, when I would get to 12T, I would always be so nervous because I'm supposed to be the guy that knows what's going on. And I had no idea what the hell to tell my player. So like you said, it'd be like, hit a 5-iron and then you hit it 5-iron in the bunker and you feel like an idiot. Great question here because I have a point to make here. David Earl asked, what type of gear did you have for different weather conditions and what was the best and worst weather you caddied for? Now, we had these caddy bibs that I still have. You still have yours, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
somewhere
yeah.
packed away, you said?
Yeah, it's in storage right now, unfortunately.
It was a caddy bib. It came over. It had a little pocket for yardage books, tees, all that stuff. Not waterproof. in St. Andrews. Not waterproof.
Not at all waterproof.
If anything, it absorbed water.
Yeah.
It literally weighed 25 pounds at the end of the round if it was raining.
Yeah.
So that was what we were given.
Yep.
And then you could buy caddy. You could buy official St. Andrews caddy.
That stuff was great. Yeah.
And you had you bought. I didn't buy it. You bought it.
I bought the top and the pants. That was money well spent. You didn't buy that.
I didn't buy it. I was a huge regret of mine after. I didn't buy it
because you know I wore that jacket. I mean, for years.
Oh yeah,
after.
It was awesome.
I think I finally lost that jacket like a move or two ago.
that might have been Megan.
Recent
Megan
year.
Slips that out of like, the box.
Yeah, I think this one's gone.
This thing's faded. I mean, I had some FootJoy something or another. You know, that was good. I mean, I remember I got it before I went over there. The question was, what was the best and worst weather you caddied in? I don't remember the best. You know, we as humans typically remember bad stuff over good stuff. The worst I remember new course.
Yeah.
I was on the third green caddying on the new course. And I looked out, it was raining completely sideways. I was absolutely soaked. As you all know, you don't use umbrellas over there. I mean, it's completely pointless because of the wind. It just flips them upside down.
Yeah.
So you're basically just soaked from head to toe, especially
and the players aren't going in.
No. And then, this is a trip, right?
They're playing. This is a memory of a lifetime.
I just remember I was looking back at the clubhouse and we were on three. So the round just started.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, why in the hell am I doing this? Like, why am I, like, what am I doing? You know, I was like, I'm just out of college. Like, this sucks. And I just remember thinking, like, what would happen if I just left? Like, if I was like, yo, man, I'm done. I'm out. I just kept remembering what would happen if I just walked off with this guy and I didn't, and he just said, hey man, here you go.
The funny thing too is, I mean, the other part, you would see it coming, right? It was the har, as they would call it. And particularly you'd see it out on the North Sea and it would be like, you'd see it out there. So it'd be like sunny or warm or feeling just fine. And that's coming at you. And so I think it would have been funny if you'd have been like, you know what? I'm good. Here's my jacket. You're going to need it.
here you go.
Here's the bag.
It's going to hit really quick. You're not going to like it.
You know, stay out of hell bunker on 14. That's my only advice.
Rust Belt said go to spot after a loop around the old course.
For us,
it was Dunvegan. Dunvegan almost every time.
Hands down.
Sheena,
a lot of
so
people
nice
always say Jigger in, but I mean, you and I really didn't go to
not
Jigger
much.
That much. I mean, like definitely have some memories over there. Joe Ferry. Like our caddy buddy used to love to go to the top of the old course hotel, which was so cool. And the cooler thing about Joe is, you know, you and I are starving college kids. Joe's like this successful guy in South Carolina who's doing this as like a retirement, like bucket list thing. And so he was always paying. So it was like Papa Joe.
and listen,
I loved Oban Scotch and he loved Oban Scotch.
Guess what?
it's great.
This is not going to surprise anybody, but the hotel that costs 500 pounds a night to stay in, the bar on the fourth floor, not cheap. You and I were looking for
great view.
So I would
not
say,
cheap.
I would say we're going to say
thanks, Joe.
Outside of
by the way,
vegan,
again,
which everybody's heard of, I would say our go-to was the Way Pat. I mean, we'd go play Dogs there a lot. That was a little off the beaten path.
Yeah, yeah. The Domino's too.
Dominoes.
Man, Shane, we're staying with we're remodeling this house. We're living with my folks right now. And my son got this thing of Domino's. And he's like, how do you play this? And it was just one of those things. I didn't play Domino's forever. Just huge hit of memories came back of that. But yeah, you and I used to play a lot of Domino's and darts too.
And we play a lot of darts.
Domino's and darts.
We'd play a lot of.
And if we had too many pints, it would have fried Mars bar. In that little gas station right next door, that was
the worst pizza ever. It's the worst
not
pizza.
Not healthy.
Oh my gosh, the pizza. The we pizza would be wasted.
Bad.
And the pizza was terrible.
You had enough pints, it tasted fine.
I mean, like I said, a lot of questions about kind of conditions and American caddies. I did get a lot of questions about the first hole you mentioned, you know, can't go far enough left. I had players hit it out of bounds right a lot, you know, over by the Himalayas.
Oh, yeah.
Always knew it was going to be a long day when that was the case. When you hit it right there, you know,
just stay left.
Yeah. And I mean, you get a lot of, I got a lot of questions too about people asking what you do if the player couldn't get out of the bunker. And, you know, I mean, again, it's a while.
I think
ago.
It ever happened
14
to me.
Years ago. But when I had a guy that was just, you know, just couldn't get it out, you know, chunk, couldn't get it out. I don't feel like I ever had the guy that would get so frustrated that he wanted to keep doing it. I feel like most of the
they
players
just throw
would
it
just
out,
throw it out. Or
I don't ever remember that happening. I remember some frustrating moments in those bunkers of players. I don't ever remember anybody like just staying in there for an eternity.
No. Luke asked, what percentage of tee shots that you witnessed hit the hotel on 17?
Ha!
I'm going to change it to what percent per group, and it was 50-50. I mean, I maybe even more. I mean, there was a decent, like, one player per group was going to shank it over there.
One interesting thing that I think people maybe don't know or understand or whatever is, like, we didn't really play the Old Course much. I mean,
yeah.
Did you play it a couple times?
Twice. Yeah. And you and your dad play it?
We played it once, yeah.
And I think I followed you. I think I just walked it with you guys. I might have even carried your bag or carried your dad's bag.
We would go play the other, all the time. So Tom,
we played a ton of golf.
We just didn't play the old course.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't give us a discount on it. The other, like, we could play the new course or the old course for a decent amount of money.
New course and Jubilee were decent.
New course and Jubilee, and then what's the other, Eden?
Yeah, we played Eden a lot.
And then your business endeavor up at Duke, we play there a decent amount.
get our face kicked in. I heard a rumor about the Dukes that in the 2010 Open Championship, the RNA had an exhibition out there, and they invited their ambassadors to play the 6-hole exhibition. And I think it was Monty was one of them, and Luke Donald at the time might have been number one in the world one of them. And nobody made a birdie at the Dukes in 6 holes of the exhibition.
I believe it.
But yeah, we play Eden a lot. Jubilee new. The Castle Course, I don't believe, was built at the time, so we didn't really go that way much.
But Crail was great. I mean, the other one we never played together, at least, was Kings Barnes.
I know.
For you and I, it was just too much money.
It was too much money. That was basically almost a week's worth of pay for us to go do that.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Do me a favor, as we kind of slowly wrap this up, can you just, when you look back on doing this, I know personally, when I tell people I did it, I always get, that's so cool you did it. I think as I get older, I'm so appreciative of getting that experience and getting a chance to do that for a summer. I don't think I appreciated it as much at the time as I wish I had.
Oh, sure. Oh, that's the thing I think of.
Yeah. And so just when you look back on that summer and that experience and getting the chance to do that each and every day and that being our life, what do you think about? And what do you tell your kids and your wife and your friends about 06 at St. Andrews?
I mean, I don't know. From this perspective, I mean, I think of right now, I have 4 kids, young kids, 8, 7, 3, 1, and, busy job. And there's just so much stimulus. There's so much stuff going on, like so much activity, like phone, like this, ding, 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 ding. And you and I were in St. Andrews living in a little room and caddying, and that's it. I mean, there was no one looking for us. Like, there were no text messages to check when we were coming off the golf course or emails or anything, right? I mean,
We would go to coffee shops and check our email. That's how we got our email.
At best every other day or so. I definitely wasn't spending. You probably spent more because you were still writing a little then, right?
A little bit.
You had some pieces going for Sports Illustrated on campus. But yeah, I just think the pleasantry of that lifestyle was just so nice. And that's really the memory that I have of it.
Yeah. I mean, one of my memories, I will never forget the memory of, and I haven't really explained what we've hit on a couple times. But I said, what we learned as American caddies was we need to arrive a little bit later. And why we did that was for the afternoon loop. So you and I, if we were going to caddy one loop, we were going to caddy two.
Yeah.
Basically, it was basically our philosophy. It's like, we're going to caddy two loops because we saved the 5 pounds.
Yeah.
If you go caddy one loop, you're paying 5 pounds, so you're out 5 pounds. If you get rubles, then you're really screwed. But if you get if you get 60 pounds, you only made 55 pounds for the day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, caddying twice, you'd make a good amount of money. And then what we learned was, while St. Andrews has a policy where you can't double bags, you can't carry two bags, what would happen was they would run out of caddies late in the afternoon and the tee times would go late. I mean, the sun would stay up for so long that, it'd be 4 p.m. and players would be teeing off. And the old course, there would be no caddies around. So we would slow play that.
Oh, yeah.
We would walk down.
I'll rake that bunker for you, sir.
And what would happen was the caddy master would come out and explain to our group, this is Shane. He's an experienced caddy. Of course, he would... he would indulge as well.
Yeah.
Been around for a while, knows the golf course like the back of his hand. He can only carry one bag, but he will help all the players if you guys promise to take a little bit of care of him after the round. Yeah. And that was when we learned about 80-pound and 90-pound loops.
Yeah.
We would really make a lot of money in those afternoon loops. And there were times, I remember distinctly, there were times you and I were walking down, past the Dunvegan, we're making that turn around the corner by the old Tom Morris shop, and you would see him waving at us.
Like, yeah.
Waving, like, come on. Like, yeah, come on over. Because there was a group on the tee that didn't have a caddy.
Which, for the record, he was looking for us.
Yes.
You know, right? I mean, he wasn't looking at the Scottish guy who was at the top 30 guys, like, you know, I'm done. I'm good. But you and I were really, like, enthusiastic about this. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, it was. And every time, those guys would take care of us.
I mean,
about an afternoon round two at St. Andrews that's majestic. I feel like the weather tended to be better in the evening. I don't know if that's scientific or not, but I just have better memories of weather in the evening. And when you're out at 13T, 14T, 15T, the town looking back is gorgeous.
Sunsetting, like, your back.
Stunning.
Looking at it's
the
it's
church
unreal.
Steeples and the RNA and Hamilton Hall. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful.
Well, like I look at my sheet right here, my loops page of some of the loops I went through. And I mean, you know, Monday, 6:19:06, afternoon round, 80 pounds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're trying to get 60
that's
pounds.
Big money. I mean, that's so, $160.
Yeah. I mean, at the time it was 2-1. I mean, yeah. I keep going down the list, you know, July 17th, 90 pounds in an afternoon round, 80 pounds on the 19th from John in California. Thank you, John, very much. 80 pound loop. By the way, that was a day. How about this? That day on the, nope, this was a back to back. It was, I went 75 pounds, 80 pounds, 95 pounds, three loops in a row. Maybe we need to have a discussion on best caddy. That's pretty
Yeah, seriously.
That's like 3 months.
Conveniently for you, my caddy bib is in storage, so we can't settle this.
Can't go through your notes. But yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, I know Oliver has written a book. I urge people, if you're interested reading it.
Another American caddy.
Yeah, that's a great book to read about just the experiences, some of the stories, some of the stuff you and I, you know, didn't really know about. I mean, I think we were so evergreen about.
He was there multiple seasons.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah. we were so evergreen in terms of caddy challenges. Yeah, and
you and I were like, we got the experience, we checked the box, and we were good.
Let's go. Let's go back and
maybe
have
in
real
Cuba.
Jobs.
I mean, like, Matt was out there a couple seasons, right? He did two or three. I don't know if he did three, but he did two. But anyways,
yeah. I mean, he was out there. You know, he was out there. Most of the people there are out there to work. And we were out there to work and do a good job, but I mean, we were also out there for this cool experience that we had absolutely no idea. So, you know what? If there's anything to take away from this, if you're listening to this and you're 17 or 18 or 19 or 20, and you have an idea about doing something that you've always wanted to do, all I'm going to say is, man, do it. Because, you know, Will, you got four kids. I have a one-year-old now. Yeah. You know, we've got responsibilities and jobs. I mean, it's not like you and I can throw our stuff in a bag and go and get on a train to Lucre's and hope that we can get in and find a place to live and a lady that'll host us. I mean, that life, you know, I mean, for better or worse, is well behind us at this time. But it was so much fun. It was so much fun to get to do it. You know, it was just so much fun to be over there and just to be, for a very small part of our lives, you know, in this community that is maybe the most special city in the world.
Community is a good word. Everything from the caddies to the town, community just perfectly describes that.
We mentioned the snacks. We hoped we'd get snacks at the turn. The real hope was that our player would take us to a bar.
The drinks, yeah.
After the round.
That happened quite a few times.
Yeah, they would take
us
by a couple pints. Do you remember when we got tipped with the golf balls?
Oh, no, the Bridgestones.
Yeah, they there was a...
What would that guy work for, Bridgestone?
It was like a husband and wife, and they read something that caddies love golf balls, which is just completely couldn't be more opposite. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the last thing in the world you want. And they tipped us fine. I think they maybe given us like a 60-pound rate, which is all we're asking for. And hey, we got something for you in the car. And they're all excited, and they handed us two sleeves of balls. We were like, cool. And they said, "What? You're not excited about that?" And we were like, "No. I don't even understand what you're talking about." And they're like, "Well, I guess we'll scratch that." I think they were early trip people, you know, trying to give us golf balls. Like, we're good on the golf balls. But
my favorite story of being taken out for drinks was I got a lot of Japanese golfers too. I think the Japanese have a particular soft place in their heart for St. Andrews. I was caddying for these guys, four guys, and they didn't speak much English. But after the round, which, by the way, do you remember some of these words like Hori Ato, Hori Shiro? It was white flag and red flag.
Okay, no, I do not remember.
I remember, I mean, caddy for enough. I remember they started learning some Japanese words, golf terms at least. And anyways, we go out for drinks. Megan was there, my wife, and she had come to visit. And so Megan was waiting for me, 18, and we're coming off the green, and you know, my like 20-something-year-old, beautiful, very gorgeous.
21-year-old wife.
Yeah, yeah. gorgeous
girlfriend at the time.
Girlfriend was waiting for us at back 18 green. And the guys are like, oh, it's a girlfriend. And then, yeah, it's like, come on, like, let's go to the bar. And they kept trying to get Megan to bring her friends.
She's that
and friends. They were like, they kept trying to have the friend. They kept asking. They're like almost like, what's the word for friends? Like, your friends come. I'm like, no, she's from Arizona.
She's here for 4 days.
Her friend is Ivy. You know?
Her friend's me. Yeah, I'm her friend.
There's no friends. But like, they had so much fun with my wife and me. It was just like, that was the most, they were such nice guys. They bought all the drinks and we had such a good time.
Oh, I just, I remember when you would get the let's go grab.
Yeah,
let's go grab a couple of drinks. I had a few loops and they would do that. I met a guy that I caddied for in New York City one time and had a drink with him. You know, when I moved back there after St. Andrews, I mean, there's definitely relationships. I remember I went up to Jerry Tardy. I heard that, you know, at this time I'm 22 and I think I'm some like unbelievable golf writer, right? I rode for the Arizona Daily Wildcat for 4 years, so I must be great. And I heard Golf Digest.
Outstanding publication.
Yeah, they were there for the Open and they were playing around. And I remember I set up shop waiting for him to finish on 18. I went up to Jerry Tardy and introduced myself. And I don't remember who the writer was. I'm sure he's still around. I'm sure he's still doing it. I mean, you know, Jaime Diaz or somebody like that. But I remember the writer. I said, my name is Shane Bacon and I'm trying to get into the writing business. I'd love to talk to you about a job or whatever. And Jerry was very nice. I believe he gave me his email address, but one of the writers goes, you don't want to get in this business. You do not want to get in this business. And I'm sitting there going, why would anybody ever say this? This is like, this is my dream job is to be a golf writer. You know, that's so crazy. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the stuff. I mean, I caddy for Cliff Drysdale one round, you know, tennis broadcaster who does Wimbledon.
I think you did your first broadcast. Speaking of that, I think you did your first broadcast on St. Andrews. Didn't I film it? Weren't you?
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yeah, 17T. Is that what it was?
What was that for? Golf Channel or something? You're auditioning? Where did we get a camera from?
We must use my digital camera. It must have had a video function on it.
I bet that was it.
I mean, it must have been. I mean, I hope that video doesn't exist. I hope
I'm
that
pretty
video
sure
is,
it exists.
It needs to be
Let's
deleted
find this
as
video.
Fast as possible.
Let's find this video.
Will, I appreciate it.
thanks, Shane.
Anything else you got? Anything else about the time? Have you been back over?
No, I have 4 kids.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying. I'm just wondering if you haven't been back over since.
No, my one of my last, and it's one of my best memories of the old course was like on one of my last days there. I think his name was David Hamilton. Remember, and Hamilton, I think it was one of the caddies. His dad was one of the historians at the RNA. And I was talking to his dad or something. He's like, if you ever like a tour of the RNA, I'm happy to do it. And here's like the historian of the RNA inviting me. And he's like, you got to find a suit. But I'll take, you know, jacket and tie, I think it was me. But I'll give you a tour. And so I was like all over that. And so Ivy that we were living with gave me her deceased husband's jacket, which sort of fit, and his tie, which I could, you know, lengthen and tuck the thing. And I remember going down. And then a couple of caddies saw me and they're like, Rubles, you know, like what? And I'm in a jacket and tie. And anyways, and David took me through that. And I was like one of my last days there. And it was so cool. It was everything I wanted it to be. And he knew everything about everything. And looking at the pictures and the history of the, not only just the club, but the town and the game. And it was such a neat experience. And then I left right after that. And it was really serendipitous. And I've never been back. But I keep saying, I'm like, you know, 2010, 2015, 2020.
We're almost 40, bro.
2025.
Yeah, three years
you
away.
Go sometime.
I know a couple of people in St. Andrews. I can get a set up on golf. I mean, I can maybe get
Ivy would welcome us back.
I every time I go, I knock on her door in the last couple
I think
of
she
trips,
sold it.
She moved. So
I used to send her a Christmas card.
Yeah,
and,
I reached out to her daughter.
Yeah.
And she said she would love to see you, but I think I was already out of the city the last time I went, so I didn't get a chance.
Does
to
she
see
realize you're like a famous person in that category now? I'm embarrassing you a little bit.
Hey, you know what? I wanted to mention this before we go. Do you remember the best meal we had while we were there? Do you remember this?
So the minute you say it, well, so it's not a fried Mars bar?
No.
That's what I would say.
Wasn't
there.
In the town of St. Andrews. Do you remember our big July 4th blowout dinner? We went to Edinburgh and went to Hard Rock Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? And we were like,
and I fell asleep.
Fell asleep on the train. These dumb Americans are showing up drinking every Budweiser they have. The Budweiser. Okay. Budweiser like 5 pounds and we're drinking like 20 of them. We have no money to do that.
All right. You're talking about things I like look back on and I'm like, I'm almost, I don't know if I'm embarrassed or confused about, but we're living in Scotland. You go to one of the most historical towns in history, like Edinburgh, Scotland, like unbelievably good, like Edinburgh Castle.
It's got a
like
castle in museums, the middle of the city.
Like, there's so much to do. You and I, or my at least extent in Edinburgh,
Hard Rock.
Was Hard Rock Cafe with you and then, like, too many beers and sleeping on the train back to Lucre's.
So do you feel like you got the true Edinburgh experience is what you're telling me?
You don't feel like you might have, embarrassing.
You think it's just a hair outside of the Hard Rock. Maybe if we'd have gone to a plane of Hollywood, it would have been a little bit better. But that was great. Thanks. I appreciate you jumping on. I've always wanted to do something on this. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Just kind of going down memory lane about our jobs at the old course. And if you ever have any questions, you can send them our way. And by the way, last thing, if you follow the Instagram page at the Clubhouse Pod, which is the Clubhouse Pod's Instagram account, I'm going to post some pictures and I'll do some stories of some stuff. We still have some memorabilia. I'll post my Looper page, which I'll have to cross out a couple of comments I made about some of the players I may or may not.
Not John in California.
May or may not.
John in California in 90s.
And so I'll scratch out some of the notes, but I'm gonna post some of the stuff from those days. A couple pictures we have. There's a lot of grainy photos. The cameras back then weren't great, but yeah, make sure you follow at the Clubhouse Pod on Instagram. Will, I enjoyed
Thanks,
it.
Jay.
That was great.
That was really fun.
The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.